I'm Tommy Beardmore.
I'm Adam DiCarlo.
And welcome to Before the Break, a podcast for actors
by actors.
Brought to you by Book It. Beautiful.
Alrighty. Tommy, how you doing?
I'm good. We're busy. Natasha's doing an indie pretty soon, but she was brought on to produce it and cast it. So she's in casting right now. And this whole week, we've found some amazing people, but for the most part, the submissions have been like atrocious.
Oh, no.
Some of the reels are just like hanging out with people and just having your phone and just like looking at the I have never seen.
This podcast is for them.
Yes,
this podcast is for them.
Oh my Lord! I just want to email everybody and say, here, just switch this, and basically everything. So it's all right. It's all right. How was Charlotte? You just had a film festival this weekend.
It was great. We screened Skeletons at Charlotte Film Festival. That was a lot of fun. Met a lot of great filmmakers. So many fantastic films.
Yeah,
I wish I could have been there longer, but I was there for 2 days. That was really fun. And on to the next one. I think we're in Orlando in a week or two, and then here in New York, and then up in Yonkers. So
love it. Well, who do we have today, Adam? Hit me.
Yeah, this week we're thrilled to meet our guest. He's an actor in the Atlanta market, and you've seen him as a recurring character on such shows as Ruthless, The Walking Dead, and Bloodline, one of my favorites. He's also appeared on MacGyver, The Passage, Sleepy Hollow, and The Vampire Diaries. Please welcome Jeremy Palko.
How's it going, guys?
Jeremy, thanks for coming on, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
You live in Atlanta, but you moved to Washington at a very young age. So did you grow up on the West Coast then?
Yeah. I'm very much a West Coast Seattle guy. I was born in LaGrange, Georgia.
Moved to
Seattle. I was about 5 years old. So been in Georgia now for the past almost 5 years now. So full circle.
Oh, okay. So you came back after Washington. You went to Atlanta. And hit that market.
Washington to Orlando. I was in that market
for
almost 10 years and then decided to make the move to Atlanta because why not?
Right.
Yeah.
You're in a great market. So talk about the West Coast at first. Growing up there, were you doing a lot of acting? Was that seed planted?
Oh, no. I never really considered acting until I got to into college at my University of Washington. I was really like a jock turned, theater kid.
We've had a few of those stories recently.
Yeah. I mean, like I always wanted to be in movies. Like I thought that was cool, but I never thought that was a possibility. Like nobody I knew on the West Coast ever took theater, took acting. So it was, but once I stumbled upon it in, college, I really, really enjoyed it first of all, but it's hard to say just, hey, I want to be an actor one day, but learned as I went through my senior year and, it wasn't until I got off the Disney cruise line that I actually wanted to pursue it.
Oh, interesting. So you already had a job in acting and then you decided that you really wanted to be in. Most people are actors and then they never, ever, ever work, but you booked something and then you said, all right.
Essentially. Yeah. I booked something and I was like, oh man, this is easy. And then,
then he became an actor and he found out what really it is.
Jeremy, little did you know.
Oh, you poor bastard.
Both it truly, truly is to find work.
So. Wow. So in college, first of all, what college did you attend?
University of Washington in Seattle. So I majored in writing. I wanted to write scripts, honestly.
Well, being an actor, there's a lot of writing there. To understand story, to understand the elements that you can add to the story to enhance it. I mean, that's got to help you, right?
Absolutely. Like just the mindset of, like you said, like, side direction, things that, aren't expressed through acting, but are known by the actors can also help. So, just that mind track was an easy, switch into acting, I guess you could say, but definitely do both,
Yeah.
Also,
it kind of drives home the idea that we can't just have acting, we can't just have plan A. It's not that you're going to go to plan B. You should have a plan like A point 2, A point 3, other things that are in your knife, your Swiss Army knife that you're implementing. You're not abandoning acting, but you're helping it by having like other interests, other pursuits, other talents. So your acting not only is better, but you have other things going on other than acting when things are slow, right?
Yeah, I've definitely learned that through quarantine. You can't essentially have all your eggs in one basket. And there's so many people guilty of that for years. And you know, you put so much into something you love to do, so it never feels like work. And sometimes you just don't see, you know, results. So you kind of have to say, I love it and I focus on it, but you can't live day to day and take that rejection as much as we do and expect to, you know, you need to have those additional things to pursue. Absolutely.
Right. So, as far as college goes, I assume you've found a class or you participated in something that got the wheels turning. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. I was, I think it was my junior college and I took a monologue class and, you know, I was terrified from the start. I was terrified in class and, you know, you really, you know, kind of expose yourself in those environments like vulnerable, like that. But, you can also express yourself in so many ways that you just never could in real life, you know, like telling someone to fuck off in a scene and then turning to the director going, is that okay? Can I say that? You know, but yeah, you can express yourself. And, you know, I just think that's something that a lot of people would find comfort in nowadays, especially.
Well, yeah. Liberating too. I mean, I found that too, you know, being in a college course without having to bow down to any sort of social norms of what you can say and how you can act. And it's very freeing to be in a place where anything goes.
And you can't be judged by it. I mean,
and you can't be, yeah. Very safe.
Yeah. Safe place. That's a good word. Yeah.
Cool. And so in between this and the Disney job, before you started to pursue it, how did you get that job? What happened? Get out of college and you start auditioning?
Which one are you talking about? Sorry.
So right out of college, you went into Disney Cruise Lines, right?
Yeah. During college, I should have mentioned I did an internship down at Disney where, you know, I was a lifeguard. It had nothing to do with my career choice. It was just a lot of fun. But when I graduated my senior year in college, I really didn't know what I was going to do. And a friend of mine suggested, hey, why don't you go on the Disney Cruise Line? And I'd never been on a cruise a day in my life, but I was like, fuck it, let's go. And for 2 years, I'm going around the Caribbean. I'm dancing like a pirate. I'm hosting game shows.
For 2 years?
Oh, yeah, for 2 years.
Whoa!
I was on the Magic, and I was on the Wander. And it's interesting when people know that, and then they look back at their they're like family trips and they're looking for me. And I was actually found once, which was kind of funny, but that was my kind of theater experience, was just getting thrown into the fire. You know, like here's a microphone.
Oh yeah.
1,000 people, you know, go to town. And so when I decided to leave the cruise ships and, stayed in Orlando with a friend, I got an agent, started, you know, auditioning as much as I could. And, you know, I booked a couple of things that kind of, you know, led me down the acting track. So.
Wow. Yeah, you know, people say what you will about like the cruise line life. We talked to a lot of like improvisers who would graduate from the conservatory from like, say, Second City, and then they get put on Tour Co. And a lot of them go to ships, and some of them, it lasts about 6 months, maybe a year, but it's hard. It's hard on the, you know, that day to day. You think it's going to be this incredible like vacation essentially, but it is a lot. You know, you are performing a lot, and you're tasked with the very, very difficult job of making things a little bit different every night. And that is the greatest experience of here's the mic. Good luck. You'll think of something, have at it, you know, and you got off that ship probably with so much confidence, knowing that you can work a room, you can gauge an audience, you can make things engaging, even though that you've been doing this for 2 straight years, something is going to be different tonight. Right.
It definitely gave me confidence that I never knew I had, you know, in front of an audience of, you know, Yeah, definitely and, confidence and agents and seek
off right
over and over. So,
how was Florida? I mean, I can't imagine that there was tons going on, but it sounds like you were working a lot.
I mean, you know, take it back 5-10 years ago, and the market was a little more open. When I first kind of got there back in 2005 and 2006, they were still shooting all these Miami kind of action movies and things like that, and then Burn Notice and the Glades and A few other productions came down that way, and so that was all the talk of the town. But once those kind of started drying up with all the incentive packages that just left Florida, I remember shooting Bloodline the first season, and they were in talks of shooting for about six more seasons. And then somewhere along season two, they lost all funding and everything just, you know, went to Georgia. But for that show in particular, you can't really shoot without the, you know, the Florida Keys. That was,
yeah.
You know, Adam's like, there could have been more.
That made it.
I actually never watched past season one. But season one, I have to say, is one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen.
It's incredible. Yeah, it was really great. I don't say that because I was in it, but because when I got cast, we didn't know anything about it to any of the other actors that were cast around the time. I just got a call from my agent saying, head down to the Keys and we'll let you know. I mean, it was called AZK Untitled Project, but there was rumors of, you know, big actors being on set. And I remember when I got down to my hotel, they sent me the script and I saw the cast list. I had no clue. And, you know, Sissy Spacek, Kyle Chandler.
Ben Mendelsohn,
Norbert, Leo Butz. And
unbelievable.
Linda Cardellini. And I just remember, you know, being a little nervous at that point. But
tell me about that. Talk to me about the imposter syndrome and that those nerves before you're this is going from AAA ball to the majors darn quick.
That's what it was. And I've been in a few. You know, like the vampire.
It's sports, Adam. It's a baseball. It's a sport. Go ahead, Jeremy.
when I got on set, I remember jumping in the van to get to set, and Kyle Chandler is one of my favorite actors. You know, Friday Night Lights. You know, got in the van, and I had no idea who was going to be there that day, and you know, talked to him for a little bit. His family was there, but yeah, essentially, I felt like, man, this is big. This is like the pros. You're right. So
yeah.
You worked with him and Norbert the most on that show, right?
I had a lot of scenes with Norbert.
Yeah.
I had no idea who he was. So that was kind of nice because I just, you know, went straight to work. We had scenes. And then, like, that night I went home and I kind of researched him. And he'd won, like, Tony Award after Tony Award for Wicked. So the next time I saw him was a little more, you know, reserved in my...
He's like, why are you looking at me weird today? You're like, no, I know who you are.
Googled you, so... Yeah, those majority of my scenes were there. But yeah, such a great thing to be a part of. And season two came around, which is actually a really good season. And I was kind of ashamed.
Okay. I need to get back into it. I would easily rewatch season one and then just go into two and three.
Yeah. But essentially you could tell that season three was a little bit rushed. That was the sense I kind of got from people, but, great show. Good show to be a part of.
And how was that audition process for that?
You know, of that one and The Walking Dead, they were actually my two, I wouldn't say, they're the most relaxed for some reason because they were home auditions. I got to tape with, you know, an acting friend of mine, sent it in, and was actually booked off tape for that. So it wasn't like the normal process where you get called back into a live, you know, room. So that was kind of fun to just get the call one day and just head on down to the Keys and just start working.
So for both of those shows, recurring characters, it was just one tape and that was it?
Yeah, Bloodline was one tape. Walking Dead, I'd actually auditioned for about probably eight times before I booked an actual role on that show. So
take note, actors, eight times. Sometimes that happens.
Look, it happens a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It happens a lot, but that goes to show, you know, we talk about this on our show all the time. That's a casting director rooting for you, you know, even though you don't get that role, that doesn't mean anything except for whatever reason, the powers that be, it wasn't, you know, your turn that time, but the casting director keeps bringing you in, you know, you're doing something right. So that's a good thing.
You called back for the next thing. That's all you can do is just give them a great tape every single time and stop.
Yep.
Don't worry about it. That's what I tell anyone who ever asks for advice on the audition front.
And to know that if they keep bringing you back, you're doing good. And at one point it'll be your time.
Yeah,
you know?
Casting, I essentially believe, does not waste their time. They're not going to see everybody, unfortunately. So you want to be as prepared as possible for those opportunities you do get.
Yeah. And to just think about the numbers of it, you know, like something like Walking Dead or anything that's here in New York, LA, they get hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions for stuff. And then out of that, it's only, you know, what, 15 to 20 maybe that they call in depending on the size of the role. So if you're out of all those people, the tiny amount that they keep calling in, you're doing something well. So, you know, don't get discouraged because it's a show you want to be on and they keep calling you and you don't get it. Like, just know they're rooting for you. So that should keep, you know, your wheels turning and keep you going.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So you went in several times for Walking Dead and then you finally got it. And that was just the one tape as well?
That was actually a fun audition. It was a dummy sides. I'm sure you hear that term very often. You know, they give you fake scenes, fake scenarios, you know, that have nothing to do with the actual show. So I had to do a read for Walking Dead, and it was like a robbery heist type thing. And I had to do two takes, they tell you. And I always tell anybody who's doing two takes, do them completely different, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Could you imagine?
But obviously grounded. You don't want to do one like, you know, Jim Carrey and one like...
You don't want to be like a Muppet in one.
Yeah, right.
You want to keep them very grounded to the show and whatever purpose of it serve. But obviously do two different things, you know, so they can see what kind of range you can work with.
Yeah, yeah. When someone says, "Well, you want to go again or we'll take it another time," they're not saying do everything you did last time. I just sneezed. And I missed it. Sorry. They're asking for you to do something a little bit different so that they can what? See a little something different, a little bit of range, right. just a little
direction, obviously. So.
Right. Well, that too. Right. Right. So, and how long were you there on that show?
On that show? I mean, wow. Yeah. It was, I guess 3 years essentially, but you know, they shoot 6 months or off 6 months, they shoot 6 months. And when I got on, I was at the end of season six. I believe it was 11 and 12. And then season 7 was interesting because, myself and a couple actors in Orlando, we'd always get like, you know, texts or calls from the agent saying, "Hey, are you available to shoot next week?" And of course we're always, like ready to go. And, season 7 came around, they just kept calling and calling and, but they never actually booked. So I only did one episode in season 7. Then season 8 came around and a lot of us, it was like the first day of school. Everyone got the call that like, "Hey, you're all coming back." So we all were up in Georgia for the first and second, at least I was, the second episode shooting. So five episodes and, then they, got rid of a lot of us. So,
But what are I imagine Jeremy had his backpack on with like his number two pencils. He's ready to go back to school. So happy.
Yeah, I spent like, we shot so much and, there was a lot of bad weather as well. So a lot of us got hunkered down in hotels for like tornadoes and stuff. So I was in this hotel for like four weeks when I was supposed to be there like 10 days. So.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Good Lord.
But
like, and what was that like being a part of a show like that? And just, it's such a massive show with such a huge following. And I know I see on social media, you do a lot of the conventions and stuff. What has just been part of that world been like?
Well, first of all, it's like an incredible honor just to be on that show or to get any sort of speaking role on that show. But yeah, the fan base is something, it's unreal at times, that's for sure. And it's a very humbling experience, obviously, because as an actor, you just want to keep working. You just want the next job. You want the next job. I mean, I haven't worked on that show in, you know, 2.5 years, 3 years, and people are still talking about it. And like you said, I'm still given these opportunities to kind of travel and meet fans of the show. So that's unreal. That's really unreal. And somebody once equated it to Star Trek, and I'm not like a huge Trekkie, but in the sense that like in pop culture, people will remember that show for
a
couple of years to come with spinoffs and all these things. So yeah, it's a very humbling experience as an actor to have been a part of that for however many, you know, episodes and time I got, you know, on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes a show will come on and it's only for that generation of people to watch. And then it kind of sends itself off to oblivion, but shows like this that are just so iconic, they can last forever. And you've got a fresh crop of audience every year that it's anywhere streaming or whatever. So I think you're going to continue to, be engaged with fans as time just goes on. And sometimes shows get even more popular long, long after it's air, you know, it just creates this.
Let them keep rolling.
Amen. Amen, brother. So let's talk about the 10 years in Florida. You're booking, you're not. What's like, were there peaks and valleys as much as anywhere else?
Oh yeah. It was such a wild time because I worked at a theme park, I worked at Universal Studios, and I was both on stage and behind stage working there as a technician for the stunt shows. But then like the seasonal shows came around, and there was one in particular called the Bill and Ted Show, down at Universal Studios, Halloween Horror Nights for, you know, 3 months. And it was just this wild live stage show that was essentially a Family Guy episode. Like every year it would be, you know, Bill and Ted, you know, travel in a phone booth and have to save pop culture characters from that year. So you're talking about like Britney Spears, like Eminem, and like every character you can think of in between. So I did that for about 10 years while also working in the theme parks, but it allowed me to have the freedom to kind of audition here and there. And honestly, anytime an audition came up, I was given the time, or I made the time to audition. And when I booked, I could obviously find people to replace me at, you know, other jobs I was working. So it was a good environment to just kind of, you know, be able to do that. Cause a lot of people, you know, who work 9 to 5 and have other things in their life can't do that as easily. So I was very lucky to do that. But yeah, I kind of booked one thing here, one thing there, one thing here. And it kind of just started, you know, kind of giving me momentum in my mind, at least, to just keep pursuing it. So.
And at that time, did you think, okay, I'm in Florida and I'm booking, I wonder how I do on the coasts? Did that ever tempt you?
I did. I actually, after I did Bloodline, I got a call from this guy who basically said, "Hey, listen, I think you got the stuff. I want you to come out to LA." You know, he's a manager type. I flew out there. I kind of got like, you know, show and tell around to, I did what's called general meetings. I met with Sony. I met with DreamWorks, ABC, Disney, Lionsgate, all these people, and just, you know, filled my head full of hopes and dreams. And then, you know, I flew back to Florida, which is all on my own dime. You know, I went and stayed out with some friends, and then I got a call like 3 weeks later from this guy who wanted to manage me and said, "Sorry, you're not sexy enough." And that was my California hopes and dreams. And then about 3 months after that, I booked The Walking Dead, so I didn't really care. So.
Hey. Which just goes to show, you know.
Oh God, you should have messaged him back and been like, "Go fuck yourself."
No worries, I'm busy.
I want to kill him with silence, because I figure he might be checking in on me every once in a while. So the goal is just stay hungry, keep working, hopefully keep, you know, getting jobs. So
good for you. And you know, it is.
Hey, thank you so much for your interest. No worries. I actually, you probably heard of it, Walking Dead. I just got a recording on that, so I'm so sorry. LA might not work anyway. Thank you so much, though.
Right, that's exactly what that was. And
God,
as much as
that's great.
Acting, and I love being an actor. I just did not, in California, it just felt a little too whatever for me. Like, I love Georgia. I love the people here. I love just the work environment. Feels a little more real, and that's funny to say as an actor, you know, but sometimes sometimes there's just too fake, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of great, hardworking people here in Georgia, and I love the community here, so.
It's sort of like the best of both worlds, man, right? I mean, now we are in a place in our industry where you can live in Atlanta, Georgia, and have a blossoming and booming acting career. So, I mean, I bet you feel very grateful that you get to have the best of both worlds, which is LA action and down-home kind of simple living, where it's, you're not having to, the subways and the, you know, the crap and all the stuff you have to deal with. The worst parts of living on the coast, say, the expensive houses, whatever, everything.
You have 10 minutes from Pinewood Studio right down the street here. And you've got, you know, Raleigh Studio, 45 minutes that way. And Tyler Perry Studios right there. So it's a great, I'd like to believe that Atlanta is kind of the new Hollywood. I mean, I know plenty of people who are moving here, that's for sure.
Yeah. And it's still going on, man. The last, 8 years, my friends have continually been booking more in Atlanta. I shot a lottery commercial in North Carolina like a year and a half ago or so, and the entire crew, they said, "Oh yeah, we work all the time. We can work every single day. There's so much going on. We're like, we're having to straddle two jobs at the same time sometimes." Good so problem. Yeah, real good problem.
And Jeremy, did it I know LA was what LA was for you, but did you ever even consider something like Chicago or New York, or, you know, with all the TV that's up here in New York, did that ever enter your mind?
Not really. I think I was just I was extremely intimidated to go to some place like New York or Chicago. To me, though, that's where like the real actors are. You know, like the theater based. They live it, they breathe it. And as somebody who didn't pursue it my entire life, but you know, I like where I'm at. I like what's offered here, and I love the opportunities that are here. And I never felt the need or want to go up to New York or Chicago, but. You know, now that it's, you know, things have started to roll a little bit better. I've got more experience as I've gone up. Yeah, those things absolutely pique my interest. But at the same time, I do love Atlanta. So if the opportunities come here, you know, hopefully you can grab and then, you know, work elsewhere. So
That's the hope. And it must be cool to be in a market that you've sort of kind of been there since its rise. So you really have roots with all those casting directors, I would imagine.
Where are you guys out of? I'm sorry. I didn't
I'm in New York. Tommy's L.A.
New York, LA. Okay. Yeah, kind of. Because 10 years ago, I remember reading for the very first episode of Walking Dead, and it was just called The Untitled Zombie Show in Atlanta. And that's kind of when the buzz started going about, you know, people are going to Atlanta. There's a lot of work there. And now, I mean, every project I hear that's, you know, going on, like, has some part of it in Atlanta, whether it be Pinewood Studios for, you know, pickup shots or anything like that. But yeah, most things are coming through here.
And I mean, it's crazy that the biggest, you know, movie franchise on the planet has their headquarters there.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much TV, so much film. Yeah. It's really, so that's great though, that you've been there for all of that. And so all those connections.
Yeah. And kind of going back to casting, it's nice when, you know, you get auditions from the big casting directors in the Southeast, and hopefully you can continue to build a relationship with those casting directors. I've been very fortunate to say that, yeah, over the last 10 years, it's great to get auditions from them.
So. Yeah, big time. Now, I want to know this because, you know, being in Chicago, there'd be, say, a movie that came into town and a lot of their leads came from the coasts, right? And here we are, us local hires in Chicago with your supporting roles and, we were happy to have them. But yeah. I got to tell you, not that I was treated different, but I kind of was, you know, do you ever feel like because you're local, because of your zip code on set that you're put into a group that is separate from the people coming out of town? Is that something that you feel or that you see or maybe people that you know experience?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously there's always going to be a hierarchy on set. There's always going to be PAs. There's going to be extras. There's going to be whatnot. I could just say that honestly, for The Walking Dead, like that evaporated. Everybody was amazingly friendly from the ground up. I mean, you talk from Greg Nicotero to Tom Luz to, you know, Denise Huth to Andrew Lincoln giving up his spot on Cars so makeup artists can bring their stuff to set, you know. So before I got onto The Walking Dead, I remember being an extra on plenty of projects, commercials, TV shows.
Same.
And I will tell any actor out there that wants to get into this business, be an extra. That's where you learn. That's where, you know, it can be frustrating and degrading at times, but you know, you're there, you're learning. And I remember the day I booked a speaking role, my very first speaking role was in a movie called Never Back Down. I got to set and somebody was kind of rude and was like, oh, all the extras are over there. And I was like, no, no, I got words today. I got words. The red carpet rolled out, you know, they were like, oh, here's some, you know, here's your trailer, here's some food, you know, we'll call you to set here, you know, you kind of got that lap of luxury. But yeah, fast forward to Walking Dead, that all disappeared. They were all really great and kind, but there are, you know, as most movies, you know, shoot. Yeah. They do get their top five billings from who knows where, London,
right?
LA, Chicago, New York, you know, they're the A-listers. They're the ones that, you know, the money's invested in, but those, the smaller roles, the supporting roles, the ones where they save the money, really.
Right.
You know, they hire locally, which is great. I think, you know, I'm going to snab every possible role I can get that's like that. But, you know, it does come with the territory. You just have to know that you're there to serve a job and your job might not be as big as that person's. So throw the ego out the window, do your job and, you know, have fun.
Yes.
What you should really do is know that, yeah, you want to get there, work a little harder. So.
Right.
Perspective is so important. Yeah. And so what you just said, that's, yeah.
And so what I guess another part of that question is ability. I think a lot of people before Chicago blew up, before Chicago and Atlanta started doing a lot of TV, I guess when Dick Wolf kind of came to Chicago and they started employing a lot of local actors, there was talk that these actors were killing it. These actors from Chicago were killing it, not from LA or New York. The actors that were the supporting, that were the co-stars, they're holding their own. They're doing great work. Not that they needed to prove this to anybody, but it surprised or changed the perspective of a lot of coastal casting directors and producers to say, oh, if I want talent, I don't have to just, I can look in the middle. I can look at great actors in the Midwest and down South. How do you feel about the ability of actors down South where you are? Obviously they're good at what they do, but do you feel like that's also something that they're changing perspectives on? Like they can get quality actors from right in their backyard.
Absolutely. And I love that. And that's such a great reminder to, you know, support your fellow actors because you're all competing for things, but at the same time, it's bringing attention to your market. And I think for years, I can't speak for Chicago, New York, and LA, but obviously there's great actors out there. And so to be represented, I know plenty of people here in Atlanta that, you know, I've seen them grow from little bit parts to bigger, more recurring roles. So yeah, I think it's great to see that these casting directors don't need to, you know, go to LA every time or go to London or, you know, Australia or wherever. And there's some great talent and, you know, the ones that stick around longer and they persist through the rejections are going to be, you know, coming through cream of the crop type thing. And Atlanta's got some good ones. So yeah, you guys are aware of the actors around here, you know, you watch them, but it's always great to see them succeed. So
it is. And it's great to know that actors, there's going to be more actors out there. And I don't mean just because there's an increase in productions, but it's no longer like this one in a billion chance, you know, it's pretty great to know that if you have a dream, yet you don't feel comfortable on the coast, you can still achieve your dream. And that's awesome. That's awesome to know. There's going to be a lot more fulfilled people creatively because the giving up option is less frequent because there's more opportunities out there, you know,
far more opportunities. It's not just, you know, TV or TV show or movie filming. There's, you know, a billion and one things between there with streaming services and shorts and festivals and
voiceover, blah, blah, blah. So much.
It's kind of crazy that nowadays, you know, I guess once upon a time, it was sort of theater and, you know, major film for New York and then, you know, really film and TV in LA. And you kind of just had those two markets, which are juggernauts of what they do to you emotionally and mentally.
Yeah, you can only shoot half the time because, you know, Chicago and New York, they'd all be winter half the time. So that's why I love seeing, you know, film productions move down to the South, you know, South, East. And
but it's just crazy how many options there are now, you know, because it used to kind of just be those two. And now, you know, I know a lot of New York actors who are like, maybe it's just not working here and have gone to Atlanta and succeeded so well. And they just really found their groove in Atlanta and have just booked. Or I'm going to go from Chicago to LA or New York to LA, you know, so it's just so crazy now that there's like four pretty good sizable three enormous ones, but that you can just sort of jump around to different markets if you feel so inclined, or if something's not working in one, maybe what you don't know is Atlanta would be the city for you, you know, with booking jobs. So, you know, it used to just be you were in LA and that was kind of it.
For growing up with even thinking about movies and thinking you have to go to California, you have to go to LA, you know, I never thought that Atlanta would be the opportunity that it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jeremy, you said that things kind of changed and started to maybe go more your way as the years went on. What would you credit what you did to make stuff happen more frequently? What was the thing that you kind of implemented, whether that was nerves, lines, how you went about hustling? What was the thing that kind of changed for you that you noticed as jobs kept lining up?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of hit on it earlier, the idea of having a plan A and a plan B. And the truth is, I've never considered a plan B, and that's could be career suicide at one point. But you know, I just, you know, deep down, I feel like you either do what you love in this lifetime, or you know, go work a 9-to-5 desk and regret it 40 years later. That's kind of the mentality I took with acting, and it's the only thing that I ever did that I just thoroughly loved to like my soul. I loved like, you know, playing, pretending. I love telling stories. And for that reason, you know, I never really realized that until I kind of fell into that opportunity when I found the right audition and I booked it. And just that feeling of accomplishment of knowing that, yeah, you could do this, you know, if you really want to. And just one after the other, you know, whether it be I booked it or if I didn't, because there's a lot of those, you know, a lot of those, as you guys well know. But once I kind of found that and realized that I could make somewhat of a living out of it, you know, I really didn't want to look back. And so that's kind of where I find myself today. But yeah. And I think when I heard like Denzel Washington say something like, if you have a plan B, you're going to use it.
Right.
You know, it's those cheesy kind of inspiring posts. Yeah. Kind of got me. But once I got on set, once I got a little bit of the taste of, you know, set life and making movies and making TV shows, that really inspired me and drove me in one direction just as hard and as fast as I could. So.
And the Southeast market, it's not just Atlanta. You know, you're talking about Florida all the way up through Virginia, Carolina. a lot of states, right? So are you living out of your car, popping around here, there? I mean, that's at least for me in the Midwest. I'd be in Wisconsin and then I go to Detroit and do some indie, maybe down in Cincinnati and audition for some. There's a big chunk there. So do you find yourself kind of hitting the road and living out of a suitcase for a little bit?
I mean, I definitely had those days. I remember I did Never Back Down, the first one, and then I got an audition for Never Back Down 2, the sequel, which was like a straight to DVD thing. But I got the call from my agency, and from Orlando to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, I drove 13 hours for the callback. Booked it. I drove 13 hours for the callback and was going to turn around and drive back. But I was just way too tired, so I got a hotel room. That was a weird experience in itself. The cop showed up at like 3 a.m. looking for some drug dealer in the neighborhood. So, yeah, I got the fuck out of it. But all the way back down to Florida, I got the call 2 days later that I booked it. And so I had to drive all the way back up to Louisiana, shot for 6 days, drove all the way back, and they called me. They're like, oh, we need you for one more shot. And drove 13 hours. So
now, did you put your address as not a real address?
You know, no. Back then, like I was like, I'm a Florida guy, but they're like, if you want
so they knew.
They're like, if you want the job, come get it. And you know, okay. I think my agent, I don't know if she lied to me or not, but she was like, you're their number one pick. They just need to see you. And, you know, Michael Jai White was directing it, but, you know, I went all the way up there, but I've driven down to Miami like dozens of times for a one liner.
Yes.
Didn't get it and drove 4 hours back to Orlando. So.
You know, it's that kind of thinking, Jeremy. It's that kind of thinking. I don't know how many times I'd hit the road for a two line audition, two states away. Oh, yeah. And I would tell my boss, hey, I'm sorry, I got an audition, you know, have somebody fill in, while my other buddies have to go to their job because they have a job and they would love to go to this audition, but they have a job. That's the difference between the actor who books is they're willing. The insane thing would be to not go.
I just believe the persistence of this business. I mean, I've actually seen it over the last 10 years. Some of my good friends that I used to compete with for all these, you know, jobs, and then, you know, God bless them for kind of bowing out. They're just, maybe they just didn't want to do it anymore, or they've got other priorities, and that's great. That's fine. But again, the persistence of the actors that stay in it and have, you know, can keep doing it. I think your opportunities are going to grow far more. Obviously.
There's also something to say about the constant determination, whether you're getting the results or not. And I keep going back, and I'm sorry to make this reference, but Rudy, when he gets that letter, the third letter, the only reason why every male watching is crying is because the second time was so close and he didn't get it. The first time was so close and he did it. And he did so much for 10 years. He tried to get to, it's all about the adventure and the drive and the constantly working that makes you feel like it is possible and I deserve it. It's about the idea that I deserve this. I think a big problem with actors, the reason I don't book is because they want it. Yeah. But they don't think that they deserve it. There are other people who work harder, who've worked longer. And if you've done those 13-hour drives, even if you didn't book, especially if you didn't book, then there are more cards on the table. The stakes are way higher, and you believe that you are worthy of this because of the crap that you had to go through, like driving 13 hours how many times?
Oh, yeah.
For no guarantee. You know?
Yeah.
No guarantees at all.
No, you'd better love what you do in this business, because if you don't, then you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah, no kidding.
Working actors deserve affordable and convenient coaching. That's why we created Book It, America's fastest growing one-on-one remote acting coach service, all from your device. We're not just coaches, we're working actors too. From Broadway and voiceover animation to TV, film, and commercial, real actor coaching from real actors. Catered especially to you and your path. Anytime, anywhere. We're here to train you, to guide you, to prepare you, to book it.
For more information, visit workingactorpro.com/book it.
What are the other things that you found that you like, that you did, that you kind of were surprised about? I mean, you mentioned when you began, you were scared. I was afraid to go here. I was a little hesitant. Like, you did, this was not somebody that says, hey, you're really good. I think you could have a place here. Here's your first role. You did it in spite of fear. So obviously, if this is possible, then really anything is possible. What are the other things that like kind of surprised you about yourself? There's something about this business that forces you to grow, you know?
I'll tell you what surprised me the most is when people ask me for advice or ask me to do a podcast or a Zoom thing. I'm like, I don't know what I can tell you other than like, I am making this stuff up as I go, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe aren't we all?
That's essentially the one thing I have learned is that there is no right way to do it. There are better ways to do it, I think. And for that, I offered my, you know, my opinions and whatnot, but, man, somebody asked me, I did an interview not too long ago and they asked me who is the favorite person I've ever worked with. And I was like, you know what? I can't really answer that only because the people I have worked with, I never thought I would. I never thought I would. And I gave him an example of Norman Reedus. I remember in high school, my dad showed me the Boondock Saints and I thought it was the coolest movie, and I was like,
right.
Awesome to be an actor.
Everyone had that poster in college.
Oh,
right.
I had the poster in college. Oh, yeah. And and so for that reason, I knew who Norman Reedus was, and I was a fan, obviously. But when I booked The Walking Dead, I had never seen the show. And I got in on season 6, so when I got cast, I went back and I watched all the seasons. They were on Netflix. And then I got thrown into that world the very next week. And so walking
that's
up.
That's cool.
Seeing Norman Reedus and shaking his hand, that was a, you know, kind of a surreal moment thinking, wow, like 20 years ago, I was like, man, I want to be an actor because of this guy. And I'm standing next to him on set. He's, you know, beating me up. But that was, it's moments like that, that kind of like, you know, keep it going.
Right.
And did you, I just think that as an actor, the cool part about this business, it's almost like a lottery. You just never know when it's going to strike. You could be dead, you know, out of the water. Yep. And next week you could be working 3 jobs. So
you got to just take the number every day. You take the number. You might be called. You might not.
You just got to know that everyone's going through the same hustle, the same struggle. So try not to get down on yourself and know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stick with it.
Yeah.
And so Jeremy, you've been in Atlanta for what, 5 years now, actually living there?
5 years. Yeah.
And so, how did Ruthless come about and what was that audition process like in joining that show?
Ruthless was interesting because most actors know of Actors Access, correct? I have been submitting on Actors Access for years and have never once booked anything. It's just, I don't know why, you know, I keep looking, thinking I'm going to get big roles on there, but I remember seeing said Ruthless and said Tyler Perry. And I was like, all right, well, I live in Atlanta. So I submitted, had the audition the next day, submitted it. And then I got a call from my agency. Thank God. Cause I want them to deal with everything. And they're like, oh, you're booked. You're in 22 episodes. And I was like, wait, what? Like what? So off Actors
Access. Wait. Say this again. Say that all again. You submitted on Actors Access.
Yeah. Submitted audition without my agency. Just sent it in and figured if I book it, you know, I'll just send it to my
agent. Just a self-tape at home?
Just a self-tape at home. It was one scene, and I got booked for 22 episodes on Tyler Perry's Ruthless. So,
what? How did they know it was going to be 22 episodes? Or that's crazy. Well, it was
16 episodes, but it wound up being 22 episodes. But you know, Tyler Perry kind of, it was the most unique acting experience I've ever had in my entire life.
It's like the fastest thing in the world, right?
In what way? Yeah.
That exact reason. I remember I got the call and it was like, all right, I'm booked. And they're like, you know, 16 plus episodes. And then they sent me the script and it was 150 pages. And they're like, you start shooting next Thursday. So I had like 5 days to prep myself for this. And they shoot fast and it's a soap opera. So it was very,
I was going to say, it sounds like soap action.
It's very soapy, and that can be really difficult as an actor because you have to learn a vast amount, a very short amount of time. So I printed out the sides, went to Kinko's middle of the night, you know, rehearsed all day, every day for 5 days, had the actor's nightmare every single night, got to set. And
can you explain the actor's nightmare real quick, Jeremy?
It's like in the middle of the dream, you forget your lines and everyone's staring at you. That's essentially the dream, but
and you're naked. Yeah,
if you're naked.
Mine is it's opening night. You have to go out on stage for like theater and do the show. And I go, I don't
and
know
it's
the
not,
words.
Lines is just you don't even know you have lines. Type, you know.
Oh.
But I had one once where I stood in for Robin Lord Taylor on Gotham for 5 years.
Robin's awesome.
He's the best. We love him. And I had a dream once that we were doing a scene and the producers and the director were like, Adam, why don't we put you in the whole getup and you do it? And I was like, that's not my job and I don't know the lines. And they're like, no, we're going to do that. And I was like, please, we're not doing that. And Robin was like, yeah, let's do that. And I like got in the getup and I was like, I don't know these scenes. Like, I don't know these lines. That was a weird one.
I was like, you got the guy right here.
Why would I do it?
So you're sweating. You have the nightmares. You're a couple of days out.
Yeah.
All right.
When I got to set, I mean, it was a very relaxed set, but again, they were very fast and, you know, thank God, like I felt pretty confident in 90% of my scenes. We got through them. You know, there's obviously some takes I would love to do again or get like more time in, but you know, on a show like that, it is what it is. You do the best you can and you move as quickly as possible. And
pray to the editing gods.
Yeah. apparently it's doing all right. It's on BET+. So yeah, it was a great opportunity and had a lot of fun.
Good for
you.
And
how is Tyler? We hear he's just a dream.
He is awesome. He is.
That's what we hear.
He's a big kid in a candy store. And I mean,
he owns the fucking candy factory.
Yeah. He's Wonka in that place. So,
wow.
When I shot, when I was brought back for season 2, it was during quarantine, like bubble. So it was an acting game. You know, we got tested at Wazoo every single day. I was at Tyler Perry Studios for 2 weeks. You know, we slept in the mansions that they have there and then all these little hotels kind of thing for like, you know, all the extras and the whole cast and crew. It was a lot of fun. Every night was like, you know, it was like summer camp. So,
wow.
But and it was interesting. The second they took some of my scenes from season 1 and just kind of put them into season 2, you know, because he changes things on the fly. Tyler Perry changes everything. And so for the second time around, I only had to shoot for like 2 days and everyone else was shooting like, you know, 14 days. So I really got to relax and just enjoy my entire experience with that.
Wow. And what was the turnaround on an episode? How many days would one episode be?
Oh, and they would shoot like 5 episodes in a day or pieces of 5 episodes.
Yeah.
And it was just insane how they can keep track of everything because my mind would explode. But, you know, they would shoot 25 scenes and it would be part of like 10 different episodes for 10 different character arcs. And, you know, as long as.
Gotcha. So you're not doing episode chunks. You just got to be prepared for all of it.
Essentially, that's what it was. Like every scene I had, you know, what's the gist of it? Why are we doing it? And, you know, how can we do it? So, yeah.
Great training for memorizing.
No kidding. I was just going to say.
That's what somebody asked me about that. And I was like, well, I didn't go to Juilliard. So I don't.
No kidding.
I can't memorize 30 pages in an afternoon. But yeah, it was an acting boot camp to say the least.
Yeah.
I feel like your whole experience, man, in the first 10 years of your life, of your professional life, was you were trained with in the field. Like, you weren't stuck in some classroom in the middle of nowhere for 4 years. You were out there learning. I mean, this was the Tyler Perry thing was like a master's in line memorizing.
Yeah. That's,
you know, the Walking Dead, all this stuff, as far as taking away your nerves, the pressure, learning tricks that I'm sure you're watching everybody and what they do and how they do it and the acting style. I mean, it's all teaching you.
I was actually an extra in Magic Mike, of all things. And I was in one scene. It was shot on a beach. But the whole day was just, I was throwing a football with my buddy Kenny and my friend Carrie. But the whole day, we're just sitting there watching Steven Soderbergh work intensely with Matthew McConaughey, Channing Tatum, and their entire cast. And those unique experiences are very, you know, great teaching tools.
The best way, man. I mean, the best way to learn is on set. Some of the great, I mean, I guess I was an okay actor, but once I started booking, the things that I learned on set, I think it's a visual thing, and actors are very visual. And in a classroom setting, maybe the stakes aren't high enough to pay attention, really to pay attention to everything that's being done. But on set, you're in specific situations, like my first movie, Zombie Apocalypse Redemption, with Fred Williamson in Detroit, right? I paid to be there. I paid to be there. But the first day on set, he's in this scene, and he's this ex-NFL player. He was in Dust Till Dawn. This is an old guy, but he beautiful, beautiful big black man. And he says, "Hey, I need something to do. I need something to do." In the middle of a scene, I'm like, "What is he doing?" And he goes, "Give me something." And a PA just gave him something. So the rest of the scene was him doing something coupled with his lines. And that was my first instruction of how to deliver an authentic line in a film scene when you've got nothing to do, is you give yourself something to do while you're doing the dialogue, and everything becomes natural, right?
Whatever helps out the actor to do it, you know, as long as
right.
Like giving away a scene, or it's okay to be in the scene, obviously. Do it. I remember being on Bloodline, and one of the directors, Daniel Attias, I had a scene where I was shooting across the way, and it was literally just, there's no dialogue, there's no nothing, but there's a far shot. And he comes up to me and he gives me this like page of dialogue. He's like, "All right, this is what I want you to say." And he hands it to me, and he's like, "You know, take 5 minutes and we'll go." They didn't change the camera angle at all. So the camera is still like 20 feet away. So there's an extra standing next to me, and I angled him just a little bit, and I put the paper on his chest. I was like, "Don't move." And they yell, "Action." I'm pretending I'm having a conversation with this guy, and it worked for the scene. And they didn't say anything, but I'm just saying the dialogue that's on his chest to him. And from 20 feet away, it just looks like I'm saying what needs to be said.
Good for you. Resourceful.
Cheated. Yeah.
That's so resourceful. Who cares? What needs to be what? It's all about.
Fuck off, Brando. Read off of a baby.
No
Superman,
kidding.
So right? Whatever.
You know why we say looking for a line? It's because Brando was literally looking for his. There it is. There it is. Say the line. He's looking.
He's like,
for
"I'm going to be Superman's dad, and I'll be on set, but I'm not going to memorize anything."
Right.
So
right.
We're going to tape this to the baby I'm talking to, and you're going to get a Brando performance.
Yeah. There's so many tricks, man. There's so many tricks, and you don't know them unless you see somebody do them or you find it out yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. So there are a lot of actors out there. Maybe they're just starting out, or maybe they're stuck. Maybe they're in Atlanta or some other town in America who has this, they have this idea of doing it. Knowing your adventure, your journey, what you've experienced and what you've learned, what you know about everything that you've been through, what would you say to these people who are kind of at the beginning of this summit?
Just know that it is a long road. It is, you know, for very few people, is it an overnight success? So you have to do a lot of the little things to get to the bigger things. So don't skip those things. Don't go from A to Z. Like, you know, get those shots, take those classes, audition, you know, fail the audition, learn how to audition. Use all those resources, you know, meet people that want to do the same things you do. Watch YouTube videos on acting. There's a great one from Michael Caine. I mean, they're just free acting classes that are available to you. But more importantly, just step outside the bubble and make it happen, because not everyone's going to be an Instagram, YouTube star, unfortunately. So yeah, you're really going to.
Fortunately. Yeah. Fortunately.
Take it where you can get it. But yeah, if you really want it, persistence. And to anyone who's really, really starting out, I would say join a casting or extras casting or whatever's in your area. And yeah, get on set, do student films, do college thing.
I couldn't agree more. It's so, and know that that should be like a means to an end to some degree, but just to get on set and hear the vernacular and to see it all in motion and just realize
you can do that. Like you're looking at somebody who's just saying some words in front of a camera and yeah, they're doing it really great. But you're like, man, I remember being on set and seeing like Channing Tatum and I'm just like, what's the difference? Like why is he successful? Why am I not? You know, there's obvious reasons and then there's not so obvious reasons, but I think the work ethic might be there, you know?
Yeah.
If you think you can have the same work ethic as someone else, by all means, yeah, you can do it.
And yeah, I did that for years of, you know, doing non-union background stuff, which is crazy. But, you know, I did that for several years, but it was just, it was settling into, gotcha, this is how the machine works. This is how it moves. That's what their part is, that part, da da da. What the, you know, the entire assistant directing team. All the stuff that they run the show, knowing who's who and how it all works and seeing people work and hearing how everyone talks to each other was awesome. And so for me, it was like my side gig while I was auditioning and it was amazing. And then you'd find yourself one day, I did a background on The Wolf of Wall Street, was right next to Leo and Margot and Jonah and Marty. And then a few years later, I went out for a speaking role and for The Irishman. And it was like, how mental is this that a few years ago I was background on Marty's set and now I'm auditioning for a role opposite De Niro in a Marty film because you just persistence, keep fucking going. But it gets you ready for when it's your time so that when the first time you go to set, you're not like, whoa, there's a lot of stuff going on and all these people, you know, it gets you used to the world and it's really important. So if you have that opportunity and you're first starting out, it's great practice for just how the machine works.
It's fun. Like if you've never been on a movie set and it's your first time, it's a lot of fun. I remember, I think my first extra, I was on Sydney White with Amanda Bynes and I was just,
she's doing wonderful, by the way.
Yeah, but yeah, non-union extra, like 16-hour days, man. It was
oh, my God. Yeah. It can be rough.
Oh, yeah.
Cut your teeth, but how grateful are you when you get a role, you're getting paid, you're on set for 2 hours, and you go back. Like, you know, it's that rite of passage stuff, and it's the brick-by-brick kind of mentality of what you're talking about and how you build this thing up. You can't just walk onto set. If I'm out of the game for a while and I go on set, I'm out of my mind. I just don't feel... good. I have to like ease myself back into it. And I can't imagine what it would be like for someone to just book and then go right to set. And they're just looking at everything like, what the hell is this? I thought I was ready for this, but you know, it's that crap, like being an extra or doing non-union stuff for years and years that prepare you for the time when you get through that door, you're prepared and you're responsible. And most of all, you're grateful.
Very much so.
Where can we find you, Jeremy, online?
My Instagram got hacked last year, so I had to start all over.
I did it.
But
it was
me. Just Jeremy Palico across the board on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Art by Palico is kind of my new thing right now. I got really big into painting over quarantine.
Nice.
And it is a new passion that has taken over my life. I've done like 3 art shows already.
Whoa. What's your medium? Acrylic, water, what?
Acrylic.
Nice.
I mean, I literally have painted over like 1,000 paintings over the last year, ranging from like small 5x7s to giant. I don't know if you can see that one I did.
You're such a doer, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and then I got a guitar one I did.
Oh yeah, that's great. That's beautiful.
Yeah, man. So that's
yeah. We'll link this on the episode. Your art page.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah. Just hashtag art by Palco. And yeah, I run all the social media. I'll be in Rhode Island November fourth, fifth, and sixth for the Rhode Island Comic Con.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
What else is happening in the pipeline?
Yeah, in the pipeline?
I just wrapped in a show called Tales on BET, and that was a really interesting one. They're entering their third season. It's an anthology series in which they take like a very classic song, and I believe this one is Fight the Power. And they take like a modern take on whatever's going around society, and they kind of interweave it. In this case, just happened to be kind of like the George Floyd episode, if you will. It's a very heavy, episode in which I play Officer Daniel Cherry, who shoots an underage black girl who's holding a cell phone, which he mistakes for a gun. And
it's never happened in real life.
And that was the weird part about being set is like, you know, for the most part, you go to set and it's all pretend and it's all fun and games. But this one had a bit more, a darker tone.
Solemnity.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, people weren't cheering as much when the blood splatters were going off of, you know, teenage looking, you know, actors, obviously. But I felt pretty good about it. I have no idea when it comes out.
Okay.
Probably December-ish, but I'm looking forward to that one. That was going to be a good one.
Yeah. Wow. And what's it called again?
It's called Tales.
Tales.
BET. I believe it's
great.
Season 3, episode 5, I think I'll be in. So.
Okay.
Awesome.
And any other TV shows that are coming out that you've been on that you're coming back in? Anything we can see?
Ruthless, that show we were actually talking about, was on hiatus. It comes back November 26th, BET Plus. Other than that, just waiting for that next gig, just like you.
Amen.
Oh, yeah.
You're killing it, man. You're a doer. And, you know, there's a lot to gain from your experience and your insights. And, you know, congratulations on making your own path. There was nothing in front of you that says, this is how you're going to do it, the way that other people do it. You went your other way, man. And that's so resourceful. And that's part of being an actor, is just finding a way in that side door. And you can't find it until you look. So very admirable. Congratulations on everything.
Very kind of you to say. I appreciate that. So,
of course.
Fellow actors, you guys know the struggle, and you know that hopefully persistence is the key to the game.
Conquers all things.
Yeah,
thanks for coming on, Jeremy.
Jeremy, thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Great guy.
Yeah. Wow. You know, and his story is something that, you know, I just admire that, because, you know, he didn't have to go out west. He didn't have to live in some shoebox in New York. He didn't have to. I mean, man, the stuff that we had to put ourselves in to, or through rather, to get what we want. He, you know, to know that there's this other avenue out there where if you don't feel like going and moving away from, say, family or where you're comfortable with, there are avenues to make your dreams happen right in your backyard. You just have to be knowledgeable about it. And it's great to see.
Yeah. It's a funny thing about timing, when it's like, when he's doing this is right where his backyard is exploding. So it's like, well, kind of get in on the ground floor, as opposed to, because, you know, goes without saying, LA and New York just is not everyone's cup of tea. And, you know, it was like, well, I'm already in this area and it's just taking off like crazy. And now, you know, he's been there for all of that. And
yeah,
he had two really great shows in the South to start him off with, recurring roles on amazing shows. So yeah, really cool.
I also think that, you know, like I said, or like he said before, but I had mentioned it later in the episode, the fear that he had going into it, but just doing it anyway. And then he was trained before, but his main training, what got him ready for really anything, was out in the field. So it's interesting. He had to overcome fear and get into a place that he maybe didn't know in order to know everything. He had to just say, I don't know how I'm going to do it or what I'm going to do, but I got to go. And, you know, I think he might not have gone to, like, say, a reputable official acting school, but I think he could get a master's in many different aspects of acting just because of his experience.
Tyler Perry Studios is a bit of a master's class from what we have heard before on this show and then from Jeremy.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, everybody, you can find out more about Before the Break and how to become a working actor at workingactorpro.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Before the Break Pod and Working Actor Pro. Check out Adam's stuff at adamdecarlo.com. Follow him at that Adam DeCarlo. You can see my stuff at tommybeardmore.com. You can follow me at Tommy Beyond. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a rating, write a review if you like what you heard. Check back next week for an all new episode with an all new guest. Adam.
All right. That's all she wrote. We have a bunch of good episodes coming up, so we will see you again next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Tommy.
You've been listening to Before the Break. The hosts are Tommy Beardmore and Adam DeCarlo. Cover art by Amanda June Boucher. Music by Benjamin Sturley. Before the Break is recorded live from Los Angeles and New York City.